Do you love Yankee baseball? If so, this is the show for you. Welcome to Pinstripe Talk with your host, Nick Delahanty. Welcome to another edition of the Pinstripe Talk podcast. I'm your host, Nick Delahanty. It was a very successful trip across the pond for the Yankees as they completed a two-game sweep over the rival Boston Red Sox. On this episode, we'll break down both games of that series. We'll talk about the London series as a whole, some of the things that baseball might want to look into moving forward with this series. We'll also discuss the Yankees All-Stars. The Yankees had three guys named to the All-Star game in Cleveland, which is coming up within the next week and a half. We'll talk about those guys, and we'll also break down the players that were quote-unquote snubbed from making the roster. As always, you can find us on Twitter at PinstripeTalkND. You can hit me up on my personal account at Nick_Delahanty. Search us up on Facebook by looking up Pinstripe Talk Podcast. As always, there's multiple ways for you to listen to our show. The main one is Apple Podcasts. Find us on there. Subscribe to the show. Review the show, leave comments. Any feedback is appreciated. We're also live on iHeartRadio, Google Play Music, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, Simplecast, CastBox, Pocket Cast, Breaker, Stitcher, and more. So that just means that there's a lot of ways for you to listen to our show. So there's no excuses for you not to listen in and share the link with your friends. Interact with us. We love talking about the Yankees. We hope that you join in our conversation. Let's get right into the London series, shall we? And heading into this series, I was a little bit weary as to what was going to go on. You know, it's the middle of the season, heading toward the All-Star break. You're going across the pond, a time difference, just a real different feel from a regular season series. And not to mention, it's a series against the Boston Red Sox, a team that is in your division that you really need to do well against. So there were a lot of concerns heading in, but right away in game one, the Yankees got out to a great start, putting up a sixth spot right in the first inning. And right from there, you had to say to yourself, you know, they knocked out Porcello. There's a lot of good things happening with the offense. They look really sharp. This could be a situation where the Yankees could really dictate the series by this first game. Boston would have to go to the bullpen right away, would have to turn it over to that pen that has really struggled throughout the year, and the Yankees were in a spot where they could really set the tone for the rest of the series. However, a curveball hit in the bottom half of the first inning where Masahiro Tanaka just did not have it. He couldn't get out of the first inning either. And if you look back in Major League Baseball history, and this is coming from Katie Sharp of Talking Yanks, does a really good job of providing stats for many people and really does a great job covering the Yankees. This was the third time only in Major League history where both starters allowed six or more runs and didn't get out of the first inning. You have to go back to 1989 and 1948 for the other two times that it's happened. So very rare. And what you'll hear about if you look up the London series, there was a lot of concerns about the pitching overall. You know, there was a lot of talk that the breaking ball was not as effective as it would be in the States. The crowd, the way the seats were very distracting for the players to see the ball. A lot of foul ground. It could make a difference if there's a foul ball in play that a player could get to. We saw a couple of times where players from both sides were able to track down balls that are usually foul in a regular stadium. So it had a big effect. And that game one was going to come down to which bullpen did a better job of holding the other team. And this was an absolute slugfest. 30 runs combined, almost 40 hits combined. It just seemed like this game was going to go on and on and on. The Yankees bullpen did a nice job after that first inning, heading into the sixth, by only allowing one run heading into that seventh inning. Then it became a little interesting. Six runs for the Red Sox in the seventh, cut the lead to just four. The Yankees were able to hold on. But if you look at the Yankees bullpen after that game, Green goes two innings. He allowed a couple of hits, but didn't allow any runs. Then you had David Hale for an inning. He looked pretty good. Cortez comes in for three innings. He allows a couple of runs, struggled a bit, but Cortez has been really good for this Yankee team recently. Canley comes in, struggles. They have to turn the ball over to Ottavino. Ottavino comes in, gets in a little bit of trouble, but works his way out of it. Britton and Chapman came to follow. So a lot of guys using that first game, and it left you to believe, you know, what are the Yankees going to do, especially given that Green was supposed to start that second game of the series? You know, you take the win as they come. You really have to sit back and say, you know, we took that first game. We'll worry about tomorrow later. Guys like Happ and Sabathia are telling Boone that they're available. So the Yankees had to go back to the drawing board, but you have to give credit to this team for really battling through this game. This team really has no quit. After that tough first inning where the game's now tied, they had that mentality like, you know, we have a lot left in the tank. There's a lot of good things that are going on with this team, and we're going to figure it out. Some notables in that game, first of all, DJ LeMahieu, a 4-for-6, 5 RBIs, unbelievable. This guy is not only an all-star, not only one of the most, if not the most valuable Yankee right now, but you can make the case that he is your American League MVP. That's how good he has been. And we'll talk more about him because, obviously, he played in Game 2, and obviously, he's been dominating ever since. So, he's a notable for the Yankees there. Luke Voit, before going down with injury, was 4-for-4. Hopefully, Voit's okay. It looks like he'll be ready for the Mets series that's upcoming. You just have to hope that he's healthy and ready to go. Didi Gregorius had 2 hits, 3 RBIs in the game. Aaron Hicks, Torres, those guys also had 2 hits apiece. So you look at the Yankees lineup as a whole, a lot of contributions throughout. And without a doubt, as ugly as it was, you will definitely, and I repeat, definitely take that win. You'll take them as any way you can get them, and especially when you're in a series like that in London. Game 2, not so much of the same start for the Yankees. They fell behind early in that ballgame. 4 runs in the first inning. The Yankees decided to start Stephen Tarpley for his first major league start. This is a guy who has pitched in the bullpen for the Yankees. Has been on and off. There has been times where he's shown that he has some really good stuff. But you could tell that it was just a little overwhelming for Tarpley. And before this even happened, I questioned them going to Tarpley to start the game. But I was hopeful that, you know, he could get you 3 outs. And then you turn the ball over to the bullpen and let them do the rest. You have to give a lot of credit to Luis Sessa in this ballgame. 4 strong innings of work, didn't allow a run, was able to get the ball to the bullpen, and the Yankees' offense really did the job. They scored 12 runs, 9 of which came in the 7th inning. Just unbelievable showing by the Yankees' offense. You have to give credit to the guys in the bullpen for holding it through. Chance Adams struggled. I'm sure not a lot of people expected him to do well, especially in a situation like that. We all recall the game in Fenway last year where Adams got absolutely lit up, so it shouldn't be a surprise that the Red Sox had their way with him again. But this Yankee team just doesn't quit, as I mentioned earlier. They're down 4-2, and it seemed like the Red Sox pitching was just getting ahead of them and really dominating them. You look at LeMahieu, 0 for his first 3. He comes up, and he had 3 hits after the 7th inning. Just 3 hits alone. He raised his average to .345 on the year. You know, you just have to sit back and be amazed at what they're able to do and how they're able to come up with runs so quickly and easily. You look at this lineup and it just never quits. There's really no easy way out for opposing pitchers. And the Red Sox bullpen is an absolute mess. And you have to remember, you lose guys like Joe Kelly. You lose guys like Craig Kimbrell. Eovaldi pitching late in the year, last year in the playoffs, helped them in the bullpen. But they just can't seem to figure it out. And it leads you to believe, how long are the Red Sox going to let this continue on before they figure something out in terms of a trade, in terms of acquiring somebody? Because time's ticking for them. It really is. Right now, the Yankees head into their series against the Mets with an 11-game lead on the Red Sox and a 7-game lead on the Rays. And you just have that feel that Boston's slowly creeping out of the mix. And the farther away the Yankees could distance themselves, it really helps their case to put the pressure on the Red Sox, because the Red Sox have to have an amazing second half of the year to even have a chance to make the postseason. There's a lot of good teams in the American League that are going to challenge. And let's not forget, that one-game playoff, anything could happen. So the Yankees, I think the strength of their team right now they do need to make some moves before the deadline. But if they continue to play the way they're playing, they're going to set themselves up in a good spot because they're going to avoid that one-game playoff that they haven't been able to avoid over the past couple of years. It's going to be a matter of who has the better second half. And the Yankees right now are showing that right now they're the better team of the two. The Red Sox definitely have the hitting. They definitely have the pieces. But it all remains to be said or seen if they could figure it out in the second half of the year. So now that the series is over, I ran a poll on Twitter, again, at @Nick_Delahanty, to see what you guys thought about the overall London series. 42% of the fans who voted said they're not a fan of it. 33% loved it. 25% liked it. I personally liked it because of the fact that it kind of engages fans around the world. If you're somebody from London and that was the first baseball game you've ever seen, or baseball games if you went to both, you had to be amazed at the amount of offense that was shown. Yes, you probably think that there's no such thing as pitching or any good pitching in America. However, the guys really put on a show, and these guys really showed what baseball is about right now. A lot of power, a lot of offense. That's what highlights our game, the excitement. You know, a 1-0 game would have been fun for the fans to see, a great pitcher's duel, but there wasn't much action. Major League Baseball couldn't have been happier with the way these two games went because there was a lot of action. There was a lot for the fans to take in. And I have to agree with Adam Ottavino, who said it perfectly. It kind of felt like an exhibition game. I do agree, personally, going to different countries and playing in different areas is a great way for baseball to expand their product. Let's remember, it's a business. You're trying to expand the game. You're hoping that people in London, fans in London, fall in love with the game and they want to in turn play the game and make it a bigger profit and a bigger exposure and a bigger baseball community. The main thing is you have to make sure that you do it in a way that it doesn't affect the playoff race and it doesn't really affect these players on a regular basis. And the timing was a little bit weird to me. You know, a week before the All-Star break, both teams have two series before the break comes along. And the end of June, where the games still matter, but it was kind of like a dead period in baseball where you're starting to get into the dog days a little bit. It just was weird timing to me. And I don't know. I couldn't think of a better time to do it. But if it feels like an exhibition to the players, it's going to change the whole perception of it. You know, it does count towards your regular season. It does count toward the standings. But I don't know if there's a better time to actually play it. Also, I wasn't a big fan of the stadium. I didn't like the big amount of foul territory that they had. I just felt like it was an injury waiting to happen. If they do this, and I know that they are, I think that there are little minor things that they can fix. First of all, I think the timing. I don't know if the beginning of the season would work better, or maybe even closer to the All-Star break. Maybe making an incentive to the teams that do go to London that's their last series before the break and give them a little bit more of an All-Star break. Maybe that might be the best way to handle it because then you come back, you have time to get back on track. For the guys that play in the All-Star game, yeah, you got to go to the respective areas. However, the guys that don't get to play, and that's the majority of the guys, get a little bit of an extended break, especially after a long trip. So I think baseball did a great job. I love the fact that they're trying to expand the game. I just think that it felt more like an exhibition than it did a regular season contest. And there's ways that Major League Baseball could fix that. I'm sure they're looking into ways before the Cubs and Cardinals go in 2020. But give credit where credit's due. Baseball sent the greatest rivalry in sports across the pond and had over 120,000 people go to watch two baseball games. And they got their money's worth because both games, to me, were pretty exciting for the fans. Yeah, I had a lot of anxiety during it, and I'm sure a lot of other Yankee fans did. But in the long run, it was a great showcase for baseball, the greatest game in the world, to hopefully expand its coverage. Before we move on to the All-Star starters, reserves, and snubs, I just want to mention something that I found interesting. The Red Sox didn't lose their 40th game until August 24th of last year. This year, Their 40th loss came on June 30th, almost 2 months earlier. Just goes to show you how Boston has struggled. Bullpen's been terrible. Guys like Mookie Betts, even though Cora took him on the All-Star team, haven't really shown up the way that he's capable of. But again, as far back in the division as they are, you cannot count them out. They're going to be around, and I believe they're going to get hot. It's just a matter of when, especially if they can make a little bit of a move, a couple of moves here and there to kind of beef up that bullpen, because they do have the offensive pieces to be a contender. We obviously saw that in London, the way they hit the ball. In any other series, the Red Sox win both games the way they hit. So you have to give them credit, but it's just not working out for them right now. Who knows if it's still a World Series hangover or whatnot, but for the time being, Yankees need to keep pushing and keep distancing themselves in the American League East. Last show, we talked about our two American League All-Star starters in Gary Sanchez and DJ LeMahieu. On that show, I told you guys that I thought that they would have not one, but multiple other guys joining them in Cleveland. However, the New York Yankees, who are up the top of the Major League Baseball standings in terms of record, one of the best teams in baseball, only has three representatives in the game. Aroldis Chapman, the Yankees' fire-throwing closer, was the third addition to the roster. He has been phenomenal this year, 23 saves, a 1.36 ERA, has truly been dominant, has really helped the Yankees. Yes, Yankee fans know that he likes to put base runners on. He is a guy that likes the dramatics. However, he has gotten the job done. He has been fantastic for the Yankees, and Major League Baseball recognized that. He will be joining LeMahieu and Sanchez in Cleveland. Along with the three guys who are going, the Yankees had a couple of guys who were definitely snubbed from the team. First and foremost, I would like to talk about Adam Ottavino. This guy has really helped soften the blow of not having Dellin Betances. A 1.45 ERA, 38 games pitched, has really been useful in multiple different roles for the Yankees. The Yankees have definitely benefited from having him around, and he has definitely been an asset to the Yankees bullpen. It's a shame that he didn't get the nod for the team. The other two guys I thought should have made the team and didn't. Number one, Luke Voit, 280 batting average, 17 home runs. After he got hurt in London, though, you kind of take that as a blessing. Really, do you want Voit playing in the game and getting injured even more? Who knows about his health? Who knows how he's feeling? So maybe the extra couple of days will benefit him, but I still do think that Voit deserved to make the team. And the last one, I think this is a true tragedy, and that's Gleyber Torres. The guy is having an unbelievable year, 295 batting average, 19 home runs, has really been an asset for this Yankee lineup. The American League took Francisco Lindor over him, and you can make the case that he's having a better year than Lindor, who's hitting 291 with 12 home runs in just 64 games. However, the games in Cleveland, I believe that they wanted to take the hometown guy. I have no problem with that. But the thing that is bothering me is a lot of people are saying that, you know, Gleyber belongs there over a guy like, say, Tommy La Stella. Now, my argument against that is this. Gleyber, this year, has many more games as a shortstop than he does as a second baseman. So if they should be mad at anything, it should be that Lindor was taking over Torres. Can't take away from what La Stella has done this year. The guy's been unbelievable. He deserves to be there. I think out of the three, Lindor's the one that you can say, you know, he's not having the same year as those guys. Let's give Gleyber the nod. I totally get it. I have no problem with it. Lindor is a great ball player. Nothing against him. But I do think that Gleyber Torres is an all-star this year and got snubbed of making the team. So we'll have to see how it goes. Injuries could happen. Guys could get replaced. You never know. Maybe some Yankees will get the nod eventually. But we have six games until the All-Star break. The Yankees wrap up the first half with a two-game series against the Mets at Citi Field, and they travel to Tampa to take on the Rays in a big four-game set. That could really be a difference maker in the division if the Yankees could win at least three or four and really distance themselves from the rest of the division before the All-Star break even occurs. It'll be fun to see. Yankees are playing great baseball right now, and we're excited to continue talking about the New York Yankees alongside you. That's going to wrap it up for today's show. As always, find us on Twitter at PinstripeTalkND. Find my personal account at Nick_Delahanty. Hit us up on Facebook, Pinstripe Talk Podcast. Look us up on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, Simplecast, CastBox, Pocket Cast, Breaker, and Stitcher, also iHeartRadio. You couldn't catch that? Find it on our social media accounts. It's listed all over. We thank you for tuning in. We hope that you enjoy the upcoming games. We'll continue to pour out some content as some big news, rumors, and updates come along. As always, I'm your host, Nick Delahanty. We appreciate all the support we get for our show. This has been another episode of the Pinstripe Talk Podcast. We'll talk to you next time.